Warning. The opinions of this show do not reflect any encouragement to partake in tobacco use. We are all aware of the dangers of cigarettes, and the opinions in this show do not reflect any of that of Big Tobacco. They are entirely the opinions of an idiot who chooses to do so on his own behalf.
Smoke if you got 'em.
Light it up.
Because I didn't vote for Bloomberg.
Here's to feeling good all the time, huh?
All right. Welcome to episode one of Spencer is Smoking, the new show that's a lot like Jim Rome is Burning, but without all the bad parts, specifically Jim Rome. I am here in Tony's basement with my co-host and one of my bestest friends, drinking buddies, and smoking pals, Tony Motz. How you doing, Tony?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. So this is an idea that we've had for a couple of years now that's been delayed because of an Achilles rupture injury that I sustained last year, the day before we were supposed to start filming this episode.
Yep.
But basically, the idea of the show is to ask the very important question, are cigarettes bad for you? And on today's episode, the cigarette we will be smoking is the Chunghwa cigarettes from China, which is unavailable in the U.S. and would probably cost $50 a pack now that the Trump tariffs are in place. But luckily, we've had a pack sitting on ice for this episode from a carton that Tony brought back on his previous trip to Morocco.
Yes. Illegal, if legal, I do not know. But this was a long time ago, and I just kept this one pack for this certain, for this specific day.
Yes. And before this pack, we've smoked a shit ton of these cigarettes, and they're really good, but I haven't smoked one in a very long time. Very excited to smoke one today. It's got a lovely red packaging, beautiful design, unlike some of the bullshit that we see on American cigarettes. They take some pride and care into the imagery of their cigarette, and we can only hope that no children were hurt in the making of these cigarettes. My favorite American politician, Bernie Sanders, recently said that in order to combat the dangers facing our nation, we must engage in community outreach and come together. While I'm not going to go mingle with any of the fucking obnoxious Midwestern hipsters who have invaded New York City and turned this place into a shell of its former glory, but that's a discussion for a different time. What I will do is sit in my favorite basement with my favorite pal and smoke cigs and talk to you, my brothers and sisters, about what the fuck is really going on. So, without further ado, let's
light it up.
Let's light these up. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, one for me. And one for our pal,
and
Mike.
And one for a very special guest in the studio audience, Michael Wolff, everybody. You may have heard him. He was the voice of the disclaimer that started the show. So here we go. We're smoking Chunghwa cigarettes.
Yeah. A nice little red Chunghwa script on the side, too, with the Forbidden City on the cigarette. It smells nice.
The Forbidden City is featured in the fantastic film 7 Years in Tibet, starring Brad Pitt.
Love that film.
A great piece of Chinese cinema.
I do love that film.
All right.
Mom, if you're listening, this is Mike. I'm not smoking any cigarettes.
So for how this show is going to work, there's going to be no rating system for these cigarettes. There will either be a good cigarette or a bad cigarette, because that's all you really need to know. That being said, like all things, sometimes a good cigarette can be a bad cigarette, like smoking one when you're on the verge of throwing up after drinking about 100 beers, and you think it's going to settle your stomach until you see a bunch of chunks of a chicken parmiro you ate an hour before all over your shoes. Sometimes a bad cigarette can be a really good cigarette, if you're even a great cigarette. For instance, if you're a geek to the gills somewhere in the rest of this godforsaken country, where everything closes at 11 and the only cigarette anyone has to offer you is a Marlboro menthol, because more than likely they are a pillhead, you're not going to say no. You're going to smoke that son of a bitch up and feel a calm come over you that you know is going to make you sleep like a baby that night. Now, some would say that all cigarettes are bad, especially the Surgeon General, whose warning comes on every package of cigarettes. Your parents probably told you cigarettes are bad, and you know what? They're probably right. Cigarettes are bad, and they do pose a lot of health risks, as scientists have proven. But most of the politicians who run this government don't give a rat's ass what scientists say, because in their geriatric heads, they're still stuck in the 1950s, where this is what doctors had to say about cigarettes.
More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
These are the same doctors who invented the food pyramid, telling you that you needed to eat a full loaf of bread to be healthy, which clearly couldn't be further from the truth. Although it doesn't help that all the food manufactured in this country have loaded up everything we eat with preservatives, chemicals, and high fructose corn syrup, making pretty much all of our favorite things bad. I would argue that the majority of things in our society these days are bad. Advances in technology were supposed to be good for us, but instead it made everybody subservient brain dopes glued to their phones who don't know how to read anymore, including myself, because I'm reading off of my script that I wrote and I have no idea what I'm saying. Big tech's baby these days is AI, which is inching us closer and closer to the movie Terminator coming true. They made it illegal for cigarette companies to advertise on billboards and magazines, so instead I got to look at Jeremy Allen White's dick every time I walk down Houston Street. Along with dozens of other high fashion advertisements that dominate the consumerism in America, I'd actually argue that these are worse than cigarette advertisements, because cigarettes cost like $20 a pack. And what's worse than these days can happen, you get hooked on and die in 10 years before you're supposed to. You look up and see Travis Scott on a Saint Laurent billboard and say, well, I can't live my life as a loser. I got to be like Cactus Jack and run off and buy a $2,000 jacket. And now your family's going to starve to death. It's the modern day trolley problem. You just killed 3 and 4 people when if you were just smoking cigarettes and forgetting about life problems, you'd only kill one eventually. So if everything is bad, why are we still trying to wage war against cigarettes? They introduced vaping to us and it turned everybody into a bunch of morons looking like they were sucking a robot's dick with breath smelling like blueberries and aluminum siding. When instead you could light up a heater and look like a rock star. When did that ever go out of style? In my mind, it never did, which is why we are still smoking these cigarettes today.
So what we have here to pair with the Chunghwa cigarettes is Baijiu, which is a Chinese liquor, which the New York Times I read wrote a 2015 article that says it has a taste profile similar to jet fuel, kerosene, poison, nail polish remover, drain cleaner, burgundy cheeses, and salty garbage water. So I think we should have a sip of this. It's a very meal-worthy liquor that they usually have in East Asia during business meetings and family get-togethers. And so now I think we should have a taste. Friend Mike also would like to
Mike
have a
want
taste.
One of these bad boys?
Yeah. Come here and have a shot of this. Just getting off the smell, it smells very berry-ish.
No, it smells delicious.
Yeah. It does smell nice, so I don't know about the kerosene.
All right, cheers.
But cheers, guys. And it's room temperature.
And it's delicious.
Ooh. Okay, I can see the strength has a jet fuel power, but it's very, very good.
It is. That is delicious.
Yeah, that's really
just
good.
Just like the Chunghwa cigarettes.
Yeah, the Chunghwas are fucking...
And you know who also thought that Chunghwa cigarettes were delicious, too? Chairman Mao. One of the most prolific figures of the 20th century, who a lot of people say was bad. Hell, a lot of people have been fear-mongering saying China is bad. Cigarettes are bad. Are cigarettes as bad as China? Who's worse? Well, that's exactly what we're here to find out. And I think a good place to start would be taking a look at the recent history of...
China!
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 Now, China has been around for a long, long time, but for the sake of modern history, there's really no need to talk about the ancient past of China. In my opinion, the only Han dynasty that matters is the one on 3rd Avenue. Just be careful if you're epileptic, because last I checked, that bright red sign is still spazzing out like a motherfucker. We're going to start about 100 years ago, right before the Chinese Civil War started in 1927. China was experiencing a period of transition. The last of the imperial dynasties that ruled China, The Qing dynasty, which had been in power since 1636, had fallen due to a revolutionary uprising amongst the people of China in 1911. That led to the early Republican era of China. Now, the word Republican alone can tell you where things are heading.
Oof.
The Chinese Republicans found out that this shit ain't easy, and when one of them named Yuan Shikai assumed the presidency, he said, fuck it, and decided he was just going to proclaim himself emperor, which they didn't really like, and China fell into a power struggle after his death in 1916. As we are well aware, Republicans pissed off just about anyone, and these guys especially pissed off the group that we would come to know as the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. And one of their leaders was our boy, Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong.
During the Civil War, he was a formidable military commander, proclaiming once that even the lame, the deaf, and the blind could all come in use for the revolutionary struggle. You can try and cancel him for being a communist and all the people that he killed, but you can definitely not call him an ableist. Backed by the Soviets, these commie scums fought against the Republic in two phases. Phase one started in 1927 and ended in 1937. World War II and those crazy Japanese saw the opportunity to take China for themselves amidst the turmoil. So the Chinese did what any like-minded enemy would do. They said, let's stop killing each other, and we'll go kill these guys first. Then we'll go back to killing each other. So for the next 7 years, they defended China against the Japanese until them good old American boys decided to drop a couple of atom bombs and force the Japanese to surrender, giving way for the Chinese to continue killing each other. Phase two started in 1945 and ended in 1949, which in dominated victory from the communists, which led me to believing Big Brain Mao was just sipping on Chunghwas during their brief intermission to fight the Japanese and letting all the Republicans go into battle to get killed first, knowing that he'd have a weaker opposition when they ultimately had to resume fighting, playing chess, not checkers, and that's why they call him the chairman. Now, in 1949, the People's Republic of China was born. It was controlled by the one and only political party in the country, the CCP. And in charge of the party was who, Tony?
Mr. Emperor Mao.
Chairman Mao. Chairman. He was not an emperor. He was a man of the people. People forget that. Chairman Mao loved his people. And he got to work quickly. Just like a Playboy Cardi album, China became a whole lot of red really quickly. The communist agenda rolled out, land redistribution, industrialization, campaigns against the right-wing agenda. Part of this was land reform campaign involved where rich landlords and peasants got beaten to death at mass meetings and their land taken from them and given to the poorest peasants. You wouldn't have lasted a day back then, my good friend.
Probably not. But I think that's when Chunghwas were invented, so I probably would have enjoyed my day.
I mean, he had the people working overtime to make those cigarettes because he fucking loved them.
And they would have been living in my slums, yes. I think.
On the cigarette farm.
Yeah, on the cigarette farm.
He launched what is known as his three anti and five anti campaigns. The three was focused on getting rid of corrupt government and industrial officials, and the five was focused on ridding China of capitalistic elements. Workers turned on their bosses, husbands and wives turned on each other. Kids ratted out their parents for being greedy pigs. Kind of just sounds like Mao invented Twitter. The victim of these campaigns were often brought forward and humiliated at struggle sessions where they were verbally bullied and or beaten the shit out of until they confessed to their charges. The minor offenders were shipped off to camp. Hard labor prison camps, that is, not the fun kind. And the worst offenders, Mao insisted, just be shot. If only Twitter had this feature. During this time, Mao would step down from his role as president, but would remain chairman of the Communist Party. In 1958, Mao launched his Great Leap Forward campaign, which looked to turn China from an agrarian nation into an industrialized one. He was building them cigarette factories quickly.
Oh, yeah.
He took small privately owned farms and combined them into a larger people's communes, which collective ownership served the greater good. With the focus shifting into steel production and after dealing with natural disasters, agricultural production, I told you I can't read.
Agricultural.
Sorry. Yeah. started to drop steadily. And on top of this, the farmers who were living in fear of disappointing their faithful leader were exaggerating the amount of crops harvested. They were overselling cigarettes, folks, and Mao did not like that.
Yeah.
And after the distribution, they were left little, and many of them starved to death. And the decline led to famine and death of more than some 30 million people in rural areas. Oof. That's why he is not remembered as a good guy, even though these deaths, they weren't his fault.
Love our Chung Hua, though.
Yes.
Love our Chung Hua.
Now, Mao would condemn the practices of his Great Leap Forward and express concerns over the abnormal deaths, but he would not abandon it for the sake of achieving ideological and developmental goals, which sounds like he found his answer to the trolley problem. Well, kill 30 million peasants if it meant one really great nation that made one of the finest cigarettes the world has ever seen. Mm. He would clash with his adversaries and political opponents, and many years of them expressing that they believe his Great Leap Forward had not proven successful. So Mao, in turn, just sent these guys to camp, the prison camps, and that's how you deal with adversity. In the 1960s, Mao became concerned about China's future. He saw that the old ruling elites were replaced with new ones that were just becoming as estranged from the people they served. Sounds a lot like another country I know. But he believed that the revolution of culture would unseat and unsettle the ruling class, keeping China in a continuous state of revolution that theoretically would serve the interests of the majority rather than the tiny privileged elite. This revolution would start in 1966 and end in 1976, following Mao's death. Mao said that the elites had infiltrated the government, hoping to restore good old capitalism in China, and that the Chinese people must fight to preserve Chinese socialism. He called on young people to bombard the headquarters and proclaim, "To rebel is to just be justified." Many young people and students formed cadres of Red Guards. This period was riddled with chaos and armed conflicts between these rebel guards, these Red Guards, and the People's Liberation Army.
Rebels. Rebel scum.
Rebel scum. Mao predicted that the chaos might begin ruining his own agenda and be tempted to turn against revolutionary ideologies, but the purpose of it all had been fulfilled since Mao and his radical colleagues had largely overturned the established powers. And in the 70s, Mao launched another campaign, the One Strike Three Anti-Campaign, which aimed to consolidate new powers to target counter-revolutionaries' thoughts and actions. A large number of minor criminals were executed or forced to commit suicide. Mao basically turned to anybody he didn't like and said,
"If you get the opportunity, you should kill yourself."
Overall, this revolutionary led to the destruction of much of Chinese cultural heritage, the imprisonment
It's okay.
Of many Chinese citizens and the death of almost 1.5 million people. Mao's health started to decline from, you guessed it, chain smoking these bad boys, Chung Hua's.
Specifically Chung Hua's.
He loved them till the end.
Yeah.
He had lung and heart ailments, possibly Parkinson's disease and Lou Gehrig's disease. He died of a heart attack on September 9th, 1976. They embalmed his body, wrapped it in a CCP flag, lay it in the Great Hall of the People for 1 week, while an estimated 1 million Chinese citizens came to pay their respects. On September 18th in Tiananmen Square, millions came to say goodbye before he was laid to rest in his very own mausoleum.
Mausoleum. Interesting.
This, of course, was against his wishes to be cremated, but I think Mao could respect his people revolting one last time. But it wouldn't be too long before China's next folk hero would rise to power. In just 4 short years, a man would come to power that was instrumental in transforming China into the industrial world power that it is today. That man was, of course, Ronald Reagan.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
If you thought all this shit in China was fucked up, let's go across the Pacific to a really, really fucked up place called America. In 1980, the Republican messiah, Ronald Reagan, was elected president, promising to usher in a boom of business and growth for the American economy, which had taken a bit of a tumble throughout the 70s. Most notably in 1971, when President Nixon removed the gold standard, which backed the U.S. economy's value in gold and transitioned into being backed by whatever the hell we say it's worth, because if you don't like it, how about we nuke you like we nuked Japan? They didn't like that very much, and I don't think you will either. This led to inflation, and let's not forget the Vietnam War, in which America was pouring countless resources into due to the fact that they didn't want to lose their first war, which they eventually did. Mm. Reagan promised a new age of American utopia, mirroring that of the 50s and 60s, when America became the richest and greatest economical civilization in history due to the high marginal tax rate on wealthiest Americans, contributing to a federal government with vast wealth that could fund many social programs initiated through FDR, the New Deal Democrats, and the building of the Eisenhower Interstate System, which connected every major American city with a brand new highway. The booming American manufacturing industry that was producing steel, automobiles, washing machines, refrigerators, cigarettes, microwaves, cigarettes, textiles, cigarettes, ovens, cigarettes, toys, sporting goods, cigarettes, and construction equipment, you name it, especially cigarettes, it was made in America. The strong and powerful union American workforce that had made all these hardworking Americans earn a very decent wage that could afford to buy all these things they made for their families and enjoy all the pleasures life had to offer. Ronald Reagan's plan, however, was to return to this simple time that we had in this country by cutting the tax rate in half, allowing the richest Americans to not pay any taxes, and by doing so, the money they weren't spending would trickle down into the pockets of middle-class America. He would also start to deregulate American enterprise and financial sectors so that they could make more money without the government restricting them. He would also start to lower tariffs on imported goods to the U.S. to encourage the growth of international trade and to begin the idea of free trade, which would be the hallmark of the future NAFTA agreement. American businesses would capitalize on this in efforts for them to make the most money possible and provide maximum value for their shareholders. The easiest way to do that would be to move manufacturing to a place where they don't have to pay union wages or appease the mandated rest of workers needed. Luckily for these businesses, there was a country on the other side of the world going through drastic reform following the loss of their fateful leader and cigarette icon, Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong.
The new leader of the Chinese government opened the country up and invited foreign nations, businessmen, entrepreneurs, to come do their business with China.
China?
Especially the country known as America, who they had been growing a relationship with since Richard Nixon came and visited in 1971. Soon China would be friendly with a lot more presidents than Tricky Dicky, as major American businesses, manufacturers started to offshore all their work to China and shuttering the doors on all their businesses, operations, and anything business-related in America. And although many Americans would lose their jobs, the CEOs were fine. They got to keep their big houses and buy new boats with all the money they were making, and life was good for them. And although abandoned warehouses and factories would become a normal vista in everyday life in America, they would soon be transformed into luxury condos and spacious loft apartments for the richest among us. Since 1989, China's GDP has grown by almost 9% every year, if I'm reading that chart right.
You are fake news.
Think about all the cigarettes Mao could have bought with that profit and insisted. And instead of using all that money to fight a pointless war against drugs or terrorism, because America only goes to wars with ideas now, not countries, they use their increasing wealth to invest in their country, building some of the most intricate network of high-speed rail systems in the world, creating an incredible universal healthcare network for their citizens. They built a fucking city that looks like it could be from Star Wars, with trains zipping through buildings and people walking on top of skyscrapers to get to other skyscrapers. They even kept the spirit of Mao alive by executing 14 billionaires over the past 8 years to make sure the rich and powerful don't fuck up the society they've built for their citizens. I bet if a Mao were alive today, I would really love his platform to transform the Democratic Party. Sure, they have that social credit system, which may or may not even be a thing, since during the TikTok ban, when users flocked to that other Chinese TikTok social network with name I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
And don't want to try to pronounce. People discovered that it really wasn't a thing. And even if it was, all it really does is stop you from being able to book a flight out of the country if you're behind on your bills. I mean, if you're behind on your bills anywhere, you shouldn't need some number to tell you you shouldn't go on vacation. You should be locking in and certainly not opening 2 more credit cards so you can go to Tulum or Burning Man to hang out with some fucking stupid white people. It's not like America has a draconian feature like the social credit system. We just have the credit score system, which makes sense, even if in the past recent years, with the massive layoffs American workers have been facing, and with limited incomes coming in and not as much liquidity to pay bills, it's not like your credit score is going to stop you from getting on that plane to Tulum. It's just going to prohibit you from buying a car to get to that new job you get, because the Iraq war was much more important than investing in infrastructure. Or it'll prevent you from buying or even renting a new place to live after your BlackRock landlord jacks up your rent 45%. We also found out, exploring that app, that Chinese people can afford a moderately sized apartment working on minimum wage, while in America you need 3 minimum wage jobs at the same time to afford half the rent. But that's the price we pay for freedom in America, and the freedom to do stuff like smoke weed when we want, and where we get to go on Twitter and bitch about how much our politicians suck and how everyone at Lockheed Martin has small cocks. Sounds like the Chinese people don't really have a lot to criticize their government about. Sounds to me like the government has invested a lot into creating a great society that works for the people and gives them a decent quality of life. Is that bad? Who am I to judge? The not being able to smoke weed part, that's pretty bad. But then again, why smoke weed when you can smoke a delicious Chung Hua cigarette? And I think it's time we smoke another one and have another glass of Baijiu.
Baijiu. And specifically Ming River Baijiu.
Take a trip down the Ming River. That's what the bottle says.
Yeah. That was a nice learning experience you gave us there.
Yes. And I hope people now think about if China is bad compared to cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, dude. Mike, would you like another Baijiu?
Yes, please, Mom. I'm not drinking, though.
Hell yeah.
I've never been to China, folks, and I don't know if I'm ever going to... Do you want to go to China?
I do. I am... I would love to go to Shanghai, actually. I've always wanted to. I'm just afraid of the smog.
Yeah.
But I mean, otherwise, you know, I'm smoking.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it doesn't really matter. They're smoking. Mao was a chain smoker. He lived till 82.
Go to Hester Street. They're all fucking smoking.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's smoking. But no, I really would love to. Yeah. Hong Kong too. I know.
Chris has been to friend of the program, Chris Matina, folks.
Yeah.
He's been to Hong Kong. He said Hong Kong was sick.
Yeah. I'm sure, dude.
I want to go to that fucking the skyscraper city.
I would love to eat. Oh,
whatever it's called.
What is that called?
It's the city where
Shang something.
It's the city where the guy on Instagram who does the Trump impersonation, that guy.
Right.
I mean, Chongqing. I think it's Chongqing, but I'm not sure.
What do you think of the Chinese message today about the tariffs? Well, they were ready to fight till the end.
They're right.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into that in a future episode where we discuss another country, but I mean, where'd the lighter go? Oh, here it is. they're right. You can't spend like half a fucking century pouring all this money into building up manufacturing in one country while you fucking ruin your own country, and then like one day just say, oh, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the amount of work that they do to change their country culturally, technologically. I mean, even now they're adding on defense spending too. I mean, China's. You know,
I mean,
huge
I've watched videos of the Chinese fighter jets that they fly like fucking X-wings.
Crazy, right?
And all the billion-dollar F-35 that America's been pouring money just like fall. All the videos it just falls out of the sky.
Are we fucked?
We might be. I don't know. I hope so. Where's that soundbite? I missed that one. Fucking. But we.
I hope so.
We might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I just even with all these countries, I think the biggest fucking thing is they all have high speed rails. This is the country that invented the railroads, and they fucking suck ass.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I don't understand to pay a $500 ticket to sit in a booth on a 3-day train to go to Los Angeles. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's all we have.
That's part of the American experience, brother. Looking out the window and seeing the beautiful land.
Wouldn't it be better to have a 3-hour train?
Yeah, it'd be better.
Mm. Oh, my gosh, Baijiu.
Yeah, you could live in Philadelphia and work in New York and get there in like 20 minutes.
I know. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine
I'd
that.
I'd be going all over the country.
Everywhere. How's that? You like that baijiu?
It's okay.
It's strong.
I like it.
I wouldn't say, yeah, I mean, it's strong. Have you eaten? I mean, you know, New York Times was wrong saying it was kerosene-like, but I mean, this shit is strong. But otherwise, how was your week this week?
Yeah, it was fine. I was down in Atlantic City working on an untitled Steven Spielberg movie that I can't talk about because I signed an NDA. But everybody knows because they put it on the news.
Oof. I just, I watched Anora for the first time in theaters.
Did you like it?
It was fun. It was entertaining, I would say.
She's a whore.
Yeah. No, her acting was incredible. She did sound like it just reminded me of, you know, South Brooklyn accent. She had a great South Brooklyn accent.
She's a good actress. Yeah. I give a fuck about that movie because of all the shit that was coming out about the non-union labor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the budget that he had, you're supposed to, you know, hire proper workers to do that stuff, especially with like the lack of speaking of lack of work, with the lack of work of in the film industry in the city, that the, you know, all the Hollywood studios are doing doing the Reagan playbook and just outsourcing all this shit to fucking Canada.
Yeah.
They're gonna have tariffs on movie tickets now when fucking the movie was filmed in Canada.
Yeah, I don't know. Deserving of an Oscar, probably not. But, I mean, she did a great job, so. But then again, who knows about the Oscars anymore?
Yeah, the Oscars suck. The whole Oscar campaign now is literally you just write letters to the Academy members and, like, suck their dicks and be like, please vote for my movie. It was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, then also reading, like, all those people, you know, the ones who are voting, the Oscar voters.
Yeah, they don't watch anything.
The Dune 2 thing got me pissed. Because Dune 2 was, I thought, the best movie of the year.
The Dune 2 is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that makes you fucking get goosebumps on your arms. Anora just got you horny. I mean, you know, it just made you want to go to a club and Brighton Beach and
we could go right now.
I know we could.
We'll go to the spa. To go smoke chunghwas.
Oh yeah, the Mermaid Spa. I would recommend that. We went for our good friend Matt's birthday a couple months back in 2024. It was really a nice experience. I would recommend that to anyone. But yeah, last night I went to a jazz club.
How was that?
It was good. The music was great, but it was an hour long set. The Joel Fram Trio was playing, and 40 minutes into the set, if you've ever been to Small's Jazz Club, you know that it's
a good place,
great place. They have rows. They have a few rows. It's like maybe 40, 50 people max in there. They have rows of 5 seats or 6 seats, something like that. And so 40 minutes into the thing, I'm watching the guys. We're in the second row. And then all of a sudden, this guy next to me starts laying down. I'm thinking, okay, maybe he just dropped his phone or something. And then I feel his head on my knee, and I'm just confused as hell. And then he puts his whole dead weight on me, and I'm like, this man is dead. This man just died, or he just went into a trance because this music is so wild right now. So I push him off, and I realize, oh, he's not waking up. So I tap his buddy on the shoulder, and his buddy freaks out, picks him up. The guy behind me tries to start a fight. I have no idea why. I spill drinks everywhere. But the craziest part was that the music didn't stop. So it was like a movie, as if like the music was playing hardcore jazz at the time. So the guy in the sax is blowing his lungs out, and this guy's having a heart attack. So we had to push him out. Drinks flying everywhere, and they didn't stop a thing. They were like, okay, have a seat and enjoy the rest of the night. And that was the most confusing thing of my whole week. Because I didn't know what to do after that. I just went on a long walk to Canal Street, and I just took the train home.
Sounds like that guy could have used a cigarette.
A chunghwa.
A chunghwa.
And let me tell you, I'm finishing this up right now.
The
long filter. It's really nice. It really smooths out the cigarette. It's got a nice plum flavor to it. The smell is actually way less intoxicating as, you know, a normal, you know, strong cigarette, like American Spirit or something like that. So this is a very enjoyable cigarette, and I'm enjoying myself, as well as the baijiu, Ming River.
The baijiu is great. Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, I don't know the last time I've been to a fucking jazz club. I mean, it would have been a lot better if you can still smoke inside.
Oh yeah.
Because I didn't vote for Bloomberg.
I think that's a lot of places.
I would love.
You know where I was smoking inside of? Atlantic City. You can still smoke inside there.
Yeah.
Me and Jimbo. Shout out Jimbo. Great cigarette smoker.
Yeah. Tier.
We're playing roulette at Harrah's on Thursday night for a couple of hours. He won a lot of money. I lost a couple hundred bucks, but we were having fun. It's Atlantic City. I haven't been to Atlantic City in like fucking since the last time. When did we go to Atlantic City? Like 2017? 16? That was like the last time.
February 2017.
Yeah. And
February
like,
2017. Damn.
I mean, every time I used to go in high school with, my good friend Joe Corrado, shout out Joe Corrado. Thanks for the podcast equipment, Joe.
Yeah.
We would go and have a fucking blast, but that place is a fucking dump.
Yeah.
That city is so Trump, fucking. Yeah. Imagine.
Are any of the letters still lit up on his?
It's not there.
Oh yeah.
Well, see, that's what we were trying to figure out because we went to the Hard Rock Casino, which is new, and it was nice, but it's like all these other fucking. It was like the MGM Grand in. Cause you know I like playing roulette. It was like MGM in Vegas when we sat down to play roulette, and they only let you play with like $5 chips, which is annoying because.
Sure.
They say, oh, you can win money faster, but you also fucking lose it twice as fast.
Yeah.
And they were making us play on nickels, which we were not having fun. So I suggested we go to Harrah's because it was Ash Wednesday. Harrah's, the New Orleans-themed, you know, Mardi Gras casino.
Sure.
Sat down, played with some singles, and had a good time. But, yeah, that fucking city is so trash, even more trashy than I remember it.
I mean, hey, sooner or later, we're going to get our Atlantic City right here in Brooklyn, Coney Island.
Coney Island. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to...
Nora, too.
I can't wait to see none of the rides at Luna Park or anything. I can't wait to just see...
I can't wait till it all gets leveled out.
I can't wait to just... I can't wait
nostalgic to... life in my hometown. It's just going to be all gone.
I can't wait to see a giant casino above Nathan's that they'll probably carve a hole in the side of it so the cyclone can go through it, like the building, like the buildings in China.
Yeah, just, or the slot machines while you wait for your hot dog.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for that shit.
That's a serious Vegas experience right there.
Yeah. You go to an Atlantic City experience. You can just run to the beach if you want. Yeah. Just try not to get stabbed by a crackhead.
Let's get a little saltwater taffy. We'll get the whole ordeal over here. I'm not so excited about that, to be honest.
Well, we'll touch. I mean, that's a topic for a different episode.
And a different cigarette.
Yeah, a different cigarette and a different episode. I hope everybody enjoyed listening to episode one. This is going to be an interesting journey we go on, exploring cigarettes and the world as we know
history.
I would encourage, people to brush up on their history. I know a lot of people in this country can't read like myself, but you know, a lot of the bad shit that's going on in the world has already happened before, and it's very easy to see the signs of it, and you know how to avoid it if you just study history. Which I know that's something I'd love to know, is what they're fucking teaching kids in school these days. Because I remember learning about history when we were in school, but now they're probably just teaching fucking bullshit.
Yeah, no, I have no idea.
I mean, no Department of Education anymore, so every fucking school around the country has free will to just go nuts.
Just have a WWE chairman of life tell you what the fuck is right. Yeah.
But yes, brush up on your history, folks.
Yeah, after a long day's work, take an hour, have a shot of Ming River and
smoke a Chung Hua.
Smoke a Chung Hua.
Read a Wikipedia page, because you know, I mean, also going back to when we were in school, you know, they made you fucking cite your sources and shit, and that's when Google was still good, and you could type in something to Google, it would bring you a bunch of good sources to read. And now when you type anything into Google, it just gives you bullshit, 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 and a Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
And even though they didn't take Wikipedia as a credible source back then, because you used to be able to put whatever you want on Wikipedia for a longest period of time, Our good old Tony Montier was the writer of the hit song "Promiscuous" by Nelly Furtado. I think they finally took that down.
Yeah, that ran for
years. A long time, long time.
I was a co-writer of the song.
Wikipedia, it's great, folks. Get back on that shit. Learn history.
Yeah.
Know how people are trying to fuck you over, and to make sure this shit like what's going on in the world never happens again. But until the next episode.
Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Get a nice
soda
and enjoy a cigarette. So take care, folks. We'll see you next time.